Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and I get to be one of your co-hosts today. And co-host, introduce yourself.
Hey, we're at the other end of this virtual kitchen table. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And I'm the third musketeer, Bill Holton.
And we're excited to be coming to you from Durham, North Carolina. And we are the co-owners of the online ministry called the Global Center for Spiritual Awakening.com.
Yes, you are a wonderful resource. Things you get for free and things you can purchase, and all of it amazingly good, right?
Thank you. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you can find the Absolute Word, and you can find the calendar of where I'm going. There's other things on there. I just haven't updated them in a while. That's part of the plan.
And working at it.
I'm working at it. Yes. I'm on a learning curve, and I'm happy to be learning. So today we're going to be doing what we've been doing, and that's the first part of the program. We're going to be looking at spiritual law, and we decided to just keep going with the law of God, because Charles still hasn't defined it, number one. I've defined it as mind, idea, expression. And more importantly, we are finding this material really rich, usable, and valuable. And of course, we're always encouraging Cher to keep us on that practical thing. How is this practical? How is this useful?
Yes.
And so we're deep dive, right, into the law of God. If you're going to be wet, you might as well be in the deep end, as we've said.
That's it.
And in the second segment, we're going to be doing Bill's book, Reverend Bill Unplugged and Unedited. I'm going to let Cher introduce that when we get there. And of course, we're following up at the end of the program with another Absolute Word. So I'm ready to romp. You guys ready to romp?
We are. As soon as we affirm that it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
It's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And now it's really another beautiful day in my consciousness. Thank you, Cher, for the reminder. You're going to be our reader today?
I will. Delightfully so. And we are going to pick up with where Charles Fillmore talks about the law of God from the book Prosperity. So this is, if you have the version that we used, it's pages 72, 73 in that book, which will help you look it up if you want to look it up. So here's what he has to say. There is a law that governs the manifestation of supply, and we may learn that law and apply it by mental determination and faith in the logical sequences of spiritual realities. We have thought that the laws of God were mysterious and sacred, far removed from the ordinary individual, and that we had better try first to learn the laws of food, of medicine, of 1,000 other secondary things. A strict metaphysician looks on all these temporal laws as secondary to the one law of God. That one law, we are told, is to be written in our hearts, our inward parts. That sounds weird, our inward parts.
It does, our inward parts, right? Like it's tattooed on our heart or something.
Really? Then there is something within us that naturally responds to the law of God. If we accept this is true, that we know the one law by an inner intelligence and that all other laws are secondary to it, we are in a position to get results to demonstrate prosperity.
Well, first off, that is a lot of words to not share yet what the law of God is, isn't it?
Yeah, he almost assumes that we already know
what it is, right?
Yes.
And I still think it's mind, idea, expression. And there is a hint here in that first sentence where, I'll just repeat the sentence. There is a law that governs the manifestation of supply, and we may learn that law and apply it by mental determination and faith in the logical sequences of spiritual realities. Logical sequences, which brings to mind the law of order. And divine order is defined as mind, idea, expression. That's the only hint I have in the whole thing. I'm finding this concept of secondary laws interesting. Did you, Bill?
Yeah, and I think he's probably talking about a materialistic perspective, perhaps.
Yeah.
Man-made laws. But one thing for sure is with, and I agree, I know Shira does too with you, that it should be, it probably is, mind, idea, expression. And if we don't stay in sync with mind, idea, expression, there's another law that comes into play, and it's the LULL law of unmanifestation.
So if you have a mind law, nothing happens. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
I think that's where a lot of people get stuck on this too. Like, why is this not happening?
So that even gets funnier though. The law of God, LULL, as if God can have a pause, right?
Right. Oh, wow.
But he talks about laws of food, of medicine, a thousand other secondary things. And I wouldn't call the laws of physics as secondary laws or the laws of gravity as secondary laws, because I don't see how we could relate those to mind, idea, expression.
I think it's more, remember the verse in the Bible that said no one can serve two masters?
Yes.
And you have to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. And maybe what he's talking about here is just that we need to make sure we have our first focus in being in alignment with that, and all the others fall into alignment as well.
I can certainly go with that. And you're bringing up those two quotes, in my mind, see them as contradictory. You can only have one master. Yeah. Render under Caesar what is Caesar. It's two masters, right?
So, no, well, I guess it is
true.
In a way, yeah.
It's very interesting. Okay. But we regress. Let's go on.
Okay, so he says, we must look within for the law and not without. So that's important right there. I think he's telling us that this isn't something we can put our hands on as a material thing.
Inner thing.
Right, it's happening within us. The laws we find in the outer are the secondary laws. So there he's defining that pretty clearly.
Yep.
The infinite creative mind has given to every one of us a key to the workings of this unfailing inner law.
Okay, Charles, give it to us.
Okay, here we go. Da-da-da-da-da-da, drum roll.
Yes.
It is that everything we touch mentally or physically represents substance, and that it is limited only by ourselves in our thought capacity.
Thought capacity.
That's
another
powerful.
Clue. That's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. He says, we cannot ask God for more substance, for the universe is full of it. In other words, the universe is full of it. I think he means full of substance.
Right.
We can and should ask for understanding to lay hold of it with our mind. That is, for an increase in our capacity. Back of the substance is the substance idea, and man is related to the cause side of this idea through his oneness with God.
Wow, we can do a lot with that. We cannot ask God for more substance, for the universe is full of it. Mm-hmm. And we should say, physical substance out in the universe, as far as we know, is unlimited. Also, the idea of substance, we are full of it.
Yeah, and the whole field of infinite potential, that concept. So that really rails against the kind of prayers that are begging for something.
Yes, it does. We can and should ask for understanding, lay hold of substance with our mind. That is for an increase in our capacity.
Right, and that's divine understanding.
I would think so.
The power of understanding.
I would think so. And back of the substance is the substance idea. And so that means back of physical substance is an idea of substance. Mm-hmm. And that was defined in many ways. The one I like the best is the idea that makes form possible. The idea that makes form possible. And man is related to the cause side of this idea through his oneness with God. And so we are related to the same side as the substance idea. That's a cool concept. That's a really cool concept.
And you had given a talk, it's been, I guess, a month or so ago that we heard, when you were talking about, I think at the Union Center of Peace, when you were talking about limitation.
Yes.
As being able to produce substance or supply.
Right, and that's the concept, that an idea must be limited in order to manifest it. An idea in its unlimited potential is cool, but useless.
And a quantum physicist would say that any material form is a collapsed wave.
So a wave is like infinite potential then in a way.
Exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then you have to give it something, some kind of structure to manifest it. That's the limitation.
You have to limit it to specifics in order to manifest.
Manifest it, yes, indeed. So you want to go on, Cher?
Sure. There is a psychological reason why people should obey the spiritual law. When a person obeys the law of God along any line, his faith immediately becomes strengthened in proportion and his doubts disappear. When anyone puts God first in his finances, not only in thought but in every act, by releasing his first fruits, a tenth part of his increase or income, to the Lord, his faith in omnipresent supply becomes a hundredfold stronger, and he prospers accordingly. Obeying this law gives him an inner knowing that he is building his finances on a sure foundation that will not fail him. We have to stop here.
Yes,
talk about that paragraph.
we do. And before we start talking about this paragraph, where are we in terms of our break?
We have about a little over a minute.
Okay, well, we can give it a try. So he's clearly talking about tithe, right?
Mm-hmm. You know,
a tenth part of his increase or income. To the Lord, his faith in omnipresent supply becomes a hundredfold stronger. And what's interesting about that, there's the idea of pressed down, flowing over, blah, 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 blah. And here it's talking about a increase in consciousness, isn't it?
Yes. And you know, when I read that out loud myself, I didn't catch it. When you just read it again, it hit me. He's talking about our faith increases, not our money.
Yeah, isn't that a cool thing?
So that's a very interesting difference.
It is crucial.
Yeah, I'll take back a little of my
Well, and the thing is that Charles talks a lot about the importance of faith in growing things. Mm-hmm. And there's blind faith, which is dependent on a higher outer power. And there's understanding faith, which is based on principle and law. Mm-hmm. And so he's talking about faith in the law. And that law, we get more understanding of the law and faith in it, the more we use it. That's the
point. Yes.
And what's interesting is a lot of people don't understand, and this is my opinion, they don't understand that really faith is evidence-based when you think about it.
Absolutely evidence-based. No doubt about that. So, you know, when we come back next week to this, I think we'll start with that, maybe riff a little more and continue, because you only read one of two paragraphs there.
Right. And that's a big piece. I think a lot of people are hung up on that whole issue of tithing versus giving consciousness or generosity, benevolence, that law. It all kind of flows in here. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm just going to say that the law of tithing is a rule.
Yeah,
it is not a law, because you can clearly break it. You don't have
absolutely.
To. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, are you ready to pivot?
We are pivoting, and we're going to pivot to Reverend Bill Unplugged and Unedited, which is this great book that Bill has put together, a lot of just ideas he has, and we all wonder what happens inside his head, and it's a strange place to visit.
That's So let's just say Bill has a rich inner life.
A rich inner life, yes. And he shares it with us in this book in so many ways. And it is available on Amazon. It's also available on our website, theglobalcenterforspiritualawakening.com. So,
great. And good luck pronouncing this first word.
Yes. The one we're going to is an interesting one. It actually comes from a concept that Carl Jung introduced, the concept of syzygy, which we'll talk about in a minute. So Bill... Syzygy, not synergy.
Yeah.
I'm mispronouncing it. So we're at the bottom of page 180 is where we are. And Bill has used that term and played with it and calls it syzygic sabbaticals.
I like the alliteration.
Yeah, I think I'm going to read the last paragraph first so I can describe syzygy, okay, so people know what it is. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And then you'll understand how he has interpreted it as you read what it is. So,
and isn't there a scripture that says the last shall be first? I remember reading that.
That's right. And I think we need to spell this because it's such a, this is such a word for Scrabble. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y.
I wonder if Words with Friends accepts that word. I'll have to try it.
You have to try it.
It's a fun word. It's a fun word to say, syzygy. And syzygy, which is the S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y word, is a term used by Carl Jung, the psychologist, which means synergistic alignment. Oh. The implication is to align your human self with your divine self. He didn't actually use that terminology, but that's what he meant, by eliminating error tendencies and behaviors. So the term is really an alignment within yourself is what it's talking about. So when Bill uses it, he calls it syzygic sabbaticals. Syzygic sabbaticals mean divinely ordering the alignment of your mind, body, and soul with your higher spiritual self. So you can eliminate the following influences from your life. Okay, everybody take a deep breath.
Oh, here we go.
Here's one of Bill's lists of things we want to eliminate from our life. The influence.
For goodness sakes, Bill, it goes on for...
I may not do them all, but we'll get the idea.
Well, my invitation is for people to travel lighter.
Yeah, get rid of.
Okay, all right.
Okay, here we go. We're going to eliminate absurdity, aggrandizement, agitation, alcoholism, anger, bitterness, blind ambition, callousness, corruption, cruelty, demeaning comments, drug addiction, envy, excessive excess. I love that, excessive excess. Excuses, fear, filth, gluttony, greed, hatred, harshness, hostility, hurtfulness, hypocrisy, idiocy, immortality. Should I go on? It goes on and on and on. Prejudice, rhetoric, self-doubt, tokenism. I'm just pulling some. Unsportsmanlike conduct, unnecessary pain, violence, wastefulness, wolfishness, workaholism. Oh, he hit me there. And spiteful yakety yak.
Wow. And so this is brilliant. What Bill did here is to use the alphabet, right? And you found
exactly
wonderful things. So I like absurdity, by the way. I like to teach through the absurd. So let's not let that one completely go.
Maybe the influence of it in a negative way.
Yeah. So what was the, so it seems to me Carl Jung did have a word. Carl Jung had a word for higher self, didn't he? Or for the divine self.
Well, let's see. Neuroscientists call it your deeper self. Psychologists have called it your real self or authentic you. I'm not sure what Jung may have called it.
I think he had a word for that. Yeah. But you know what? I hadn't. You said deeper self.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really like that, deeper self. So, are you looking it up?
I was, and it's interesting. I need to put Jung with this because it's actually, there are a lot of definitions for this. It's if three celestial bodies in any solar system are lined up, you could say they're aligned in syzygy.
Well,
that's applying the word.
Right, yeah,
right. Right, cool.
But yeah, interesting.
Okay.
So what is it telling us? That's the thing is, what can we get from this statement? Because he calls them syzygic sabbaticals. So what do you want to talk about?
I think we got to let the author tell us.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is, the syzygic sabbaticals implies not separating days of rest. He's talking about rest from the negativity that Sarah just shared with us, a laundry list. A rest from them is a sabbatical. And archetype types, I think, is what Jung was talking about. When he talks about our moving to or upping our consciousness, the synergy applies, I think, to that. It implies, I think he also called it what, anima?
That's it, the anima.
Our deeper self, yeah. And for us to be synergistic with that inner quality.
So A-N-I-M-A, right?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not the other one.
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. But we could use that to get rid of the stuff we don't want.
Oh, this kitchen table's getting really weird tonight.
Right. So what I find really interesting by this definition by Carl Jung, he says synergistic alignment, but he doesn't say alignment to what?
Well, the implication is to align with your deeper self.
Deeper self, okay.
Yeah, and he does say that in more detail. As I'm looking up Carl Jung's whole theory, it is that we want to align with our true self as opposed to the masks we wear every day.
Great, fantastic.
So he's talking about that alignment.
And you could also say that, you know, the anima is the female and animus is male, and aligning those two qualities within us, I think he's probably referencing to strike a balance, some synergy between our femaleness and our maleness. Out of nurturing us and the thinking us.
And here's something interesting. I know we're taking this to an extreme here when we got caught up in Jung, but this particular description about his writing says, for Jung, the self is not just me, but God. It is the spirit that connects and is part of the universe. It is the coherent whole that unifies both consciousness and unconsciousness. It may be found elsewhere in such principles as nirvana and ecstatic harmony.
Ooh, I like that. Will you put that on the website?
Sure.
Yeah. And this is a Swiss psychologist talking about that. And what I like about it, when he says that self is not just me, but God. Years before, of course, centuries before, Catherine of Genoa said, my me is God.
Wow.
So it's not the first time that concept has been voiced by a human being.
Wow. And so, Cher, will you email that to me too?
I will.
When you get a chance? Okay. So it's time for us to pivot.
Wow. That went fast.
It goes fast when you get into a really cool one like that. And so we're looking at the Absolute Word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this one comes from Sunday, October 21st, 2018. And of course, it can be found at my website, paulhasselbeck.com. So the word is guidance. I use divine wisdom, understanding, and will to guide myself. Again, the affirmation is, I use divine wisdom, understanding, and will to guide myself. Eric Butterworth wrote in The Flow of Life, what is called divine guidance is a flow of infinite mind. It makes no choice for you, but is the urge and energy through which you can make the choice that is best in terms of your own consciousness. We use divine wisdom, evaluating, understanding, knowing, and will, deciding to make choices for ourselves. Today, I focus and invest time to discern my direction in all that I do. Whenever I feel confused, conflicted, or uncertain of what my next step should be, I practice the presence of my divinity. As this day unfolds before me, I am filled with satisfaction and joy as I use divine wisdom, understanding, and will with every step I take and every choice I make. And again, the affirmation is, I use divine wisdom, understanding, and will to guide myself.
So that's
thank you. And that's just an important concept, is that we use the divine ideas. The divine ideas don't use us.
Yes.
And that's how we bring everything into manifestation. All right, my friends, that brings another Metaphysical Romp 2 to a close. This is the end of this virtual kitchen table, and we'll be coming to you from virtual kitchen table in our next program. I want to thank Bill and Cher for all that they do to make this possible. And of course, I want to thank our listeners, because it's for you we do this. We are grateful. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And we invite you to be synergistic.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Okay, everybody. Goodbye. Thanks for listening.